The New Testament reading comes from the 15th chapter of John's Gospel. The reading begins at verse 12. Let us open our minds and our hearts to God's Word. Jesus is speaking. "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you, that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide. So that whatever you ask my Father in my name, he may give it to you. This I command you, to love one another. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." A month ago, leaders of the world gathered in Normandy to commemorate the 70th anniversary of D-Day. Flanked by stooped war veterans, some of them in wheelchairs, U.S. President Barack Obama joined French President François Hollande for a ceremony at the American Cemetery in Normandy. Joining the American and French presidents were Russian President Vladimir Putin, Prime Minister David Cameron of Great Britain, Canada's Prime Minister Stephen Harper, Queen Elizabeth II, and Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany. On a fine January morning in 1994, Barbara and I visited all of the D-Day beaches. We started east and we moved west, starting at Gold Sword and Juno beaches, where the British and Canadian forces landed. Then we visited the little towns along the coast, little towns with funny names like Langroon and Courcille. All were deserted. Each had a casino boarded up for the winter. There were very few people walking the streets, only a few people strolling along the beaches beside the gray-green waters of the English Channel. And then we came to Vierville, at the eastern edge of Omaha Beach. There is a long bluff that extends the whole distance of Omaha Beach. The Germans had the perfect defensive positions on top of that bluff in their foxholes and bunkers. At Omaha Beach, nearly 40,000 went ashore. There were 2,200 casualties. Today there is an American cemetery atop that bluff with some 9,300 crosses laid out in perfect symmetry. Some of the graves hold the bodies of the men who died on the beach below, others in their final resting place from the Battle of Normandy. Barbara and I walked along the grave sites in that cemetery, reading the names of the men who are interred there. I say men, but they were boys, really. The average age of those in the cemetery is 20.5 years. Boys from Rhode Island and Idaho and Illinois with American-sounding names: Saunders, Greenberg, Lewandowski, someone's friend, someone's husband, someone's son. A few months later, we came back to the D-Day beaches, but this time we came with our daughter Amy, who was teaching in Cannes during that year. I wanted her to see two things. I wanted her to see the American Cemetery, and I wanted her to see Pont du Hoc. Pont du Hoc is a high promontory just west of Omaha Beach. Barbara and I had gone there in January 1994 to visit the museum in tribute to the 225 rangers who climbed the muddy, crumbling cliffs of Pont du Hoc to silence the German guns. 225 rangers landed on the small beach at the foot of Pont du Hoc that day. Only 92 returned to the States. As a rock climber, I could well imagine what it was like to scale those cliffs in the face of withering machine gun fire. So on the Saturday before Palm Sunday, 1994, we drove back to Pont du Hoc to show Amy the museum and the surrounding area. There are still bomb craters there, and the bunkers are still there. They look impregnable today. While we were walking the grounds, I noticed there was a TV crew over here, and they were filming a little man, and I sidled up closer, and I heard that the TV crew was speaking English. There was one man in charge, and so I asked him what they were doing. He said they were a news station from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and they were doing a documentary on D-Day, which was to air on June the 6th, 1994. The person who was giving them the tour of the area was a man by the name of James Spivey. The producer introduced us to Mr. Spivey. I found out that he was from my home state of North Carolina, Shelby, North Carolina, that he was a farmer, that he had landed on Utah Beach on D-Day, and he had fought in the Battle of Normandy. 5 days after he landed on Utah Beach, a piece of shrapnel hit his right arm and completely mangled it. I began to wonder, what's it like to be lying in the mud with your arm half blown off? What's it like to have your buddies pick you up and put you on a stretcher and put you in the back of a Jeep and take you to a field hospital with hundreds of other maimed and wounded men? What's it like to begin rehab with a metal claw for a prosthesis? What's it like to return to the States to your family and feel like half a man? What's it like to learn how to farm with just one good hand? What's it like to go through life having to shake hands with your left hand rather than your right? As James Spivey talked about some of his experiences there in Normandy, I wanted to say something to him. I guess I wanted to say, thank you, Mr. Spivey, although those words seem so small and insignificant. I wanted to say to him, you are a brave and courageous man, James Spivey. I am deeply honored to stand in your presence. This past June the 6th, as well as this past weekend, I have felt renewed respect for James Spivey and for all those others who were interred in that cemetery and all those others who fought in the Battle of Normandy. When you read the accounts about them, very few of them think that they were courageous or heroic. But as someone said, courage is taking the risk when you know that the odds are against you. Since being in Normandy, I realize that Normandy was democracy's beachhead. And every time I enter a voting booth or walk into this sanctuary, I feel as if I should take off my shoes, for I am stepping on to holy ground. I realize that the freedom that I have to speak my mind from this pulpit, the feeling that I have of security every night when I fall asleep, knowing that the secret police aren't going to come and take me away, all of that, all of our freedoms are a gift from our veterans. Our home in Litchfield Park is about 2 miles away from Luke Air Force Base. Luke Air Force Base is the training center for the Air Force's F-16 pilots. The thunderous roar of the F-16s can be heard every day. Soon the F-16s will be replaced by F-35s. They are even louder. I've heard a few of them. Some people who live near Luke are irritated by the window-shaking sounds of the jets taking off and landing. One person so irritated wrote a letter to the editor several years ago. Here's how it went. Question of the day for Luke Air Force Base. Whom do we thank for the morning air show? Last Wednesday at precisely 9:11 a.m., a tight formation of four F-16 jets made a low pass over Arrowhead Mall, continuing west over Bell Road at approximately 500 feet. Imagine our good fortune. Do these Tom Cruise wannabes feel we need this wake-up call? Or are they trying to impress the cashiers at Mervyn's who are celebrating their early bird special? Any response would be appreciated. The response came in the next edition of the newspaper regarding a wake-up call from Luke's jets. On June 15th, at precisely 9:12 a.m., a perfectly timed four-ship flyby of F-16s from the 3rd Fighter Squadron at Luke Air Force Base flew over the grave of Captain Jeremy Fresk. Captain Fresk was an Air Force officer who was previously stationed at Luke Air Force Base and was killed in Iraq on May the 30th, Memorial Day. At 9 a.m. on June 15th, his family and friends gathered at Sunland Memorial Park in Sun City to mourn the loss of a husband, a father, and a son. Based on the letter writer's account of the flyby and because of the jet noise, I am sure she didn't hear the 21-gun salute, the playing of taps, or my words to the widow and parents of Captain Fresk's as I gave them their son's flag on behalf of the President of the United States and those veteran servicemen and women who understand all the sacrifices they have endured. He goes on. A four-ship flyby is a display of respect the Air Force gives those who have given their lives in defense of freedom. We are professional aviators. We take our job seriously. And on June 15th, what the letter writer witnessed was four officers who lined up to pay their ultimate tribute. The letter writer asked, whom do we thank for the morning air show? The 56th Fighter Wing will make that call for you. And in behalf of the widow of Captain Fresk's, we thank you in their behalf, for it was in their honor that my pilots flew the most significant formation of their lives. Signed, Lieutenant Colonel Grant L. Rosenthal. Only two defining forces have ever offered to die for us: Jesus Christ and the American soldier. The first died for our souls, the second died for our freedom. And those of you who are perceptive will already be ahead of me, for you will have recognized that in honoring James Spivey and Jeremy Fresk, I am honoring all the men and women who have served our country in its armed forces. Today, I would like to recognize all of you who have answered your country's summons to duty. Is there anyone here today who served during World War II? And if so, and if you are able, would you please stand and remain standing? Just please. Please, if you could, just please remain standing. And please withhold your applause. Anyone here who served during the Korean conflict, would you stand and remain standing? Just please withhold your applause. Anyone who served during the Vietnam era, would you please stand and remain standing? Anyone who served during the Iraqi or the Afghanistan wars, would you please stand and remain standing? And now all other veterans who have served in the time of peace, would you please stand? And now I would like to ask for the widows and wives of all of our veterans to please stand. Just please remain standing. I'd like to add to this number two of my own. I thought I would get through this. Two of my own heroes, Henry Hobson, my father-in-law, who served in the Pacific during World War II for 4 years. The ships he was on, too, were torpedoed twice, and he escaped in a life raft twice. And my own father, Jim Swicegood, who landed in Cherbourg in October of 1944 and fought his way with General Patton's army through France and Germany, and when the war ended in May of 1945, he was in Augsburg, Germany. To them, to all the soldiers standing in heaven today, in behalf of a grateful nation, we sing with strong voice, O beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country loved, and mercy more than life. America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. And now let us all stand and sing.